Lots to discuss with him. He's a former colleague of mine in the legislature. He is State Senator George Logan. George, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you? I want to say hi to you and all your listeners out there.
Wow.
Beautiful day.
Thank you. It is, actually, isn't it? It's just a little warmer today than it was last couple of days. Yikes. So lots to discuss with you. I want to get your opinion on a lot of things here.
Sure.
Why don't we start, though, with the small businesses in the state and in the recovery?
Right.
How long, by your estimates, do you think it's going to take these small businesses to, I'm not even going to say to come back to where they were pre-COVID. That's too ambitious. I believe they will, mind you, but I don't, that's not going to happen right away. Well, before they can become profitable again, let's start with that.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally speculation. I mean, but from what I'm hearing out there, they took a huge hit, you know, the small and even medium-sized businesses. So I think for the rest of the year, they're certainly going to be playing catch-up. I think we as a state, whether it's the governor's team or legislators, we need to do everything we can, to kind of stay out of their way and let them, get back to strength, get back to health, and do what we can to kind of, minimize those impediments to them being successful as businesses. There are a lot of folks that are struggling just to stay open after this, pandemic. That's another issue as well, right, which is affecting a lot of jobs. There are a lot of jobs that, even for those businesses that are going to remain open and trying to get back on their feet, they're not going to be able to hire at the same staffing levels they had before. So there are a lot of jobs that are just, gone for at least the remainder of this year. So this is still a very serious situation. And I've always said that, we've got this health crisis, but, our state was in a fiscal crisis before the pandemic.
Yes, it was.
And now it's even worse. So that financial crisis, that's really created and has been maintained this long by the policies coming out of Hartford, is now even worse because of this pandemic. So we still have those issues that we're dealing with.
And speaking to that, then, yet state employees are due for a raise in about another month, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's another issue as well. When you look at our state budget and how much of that goes to fixed costs, how much of that goes to, state workers, their salaries, their, benefits, health care and the like, and retirement. And then, all those pension obligations that we have, the current administration, the governor's team and the leadership in Hartford, majority party leadership, they don't want to look at this stuff,
Yeah.
We're all making cuts, we're all tightening our belts, but they want to continue to spend more, and I just don't think it's right.
Do you think there's going to be a special session called? I heard it could happen late June, although that might be a little too soon. Sometime after the 4th of July, sometime in July or early August, there'll be a few tweaks made to this to last year's biennium budget. I would imagine you'll come back in for something, right?
Yeah, so again, I'm speculating to some degree because I'm not in the leadership in the legislature, right?
Right.
But I think it's pretty certain that we will have one and probably more special sessions between now and the end of the year. There's so much to cover during this year. I mean, we ended the last session, right, quite abruptly. Around almost mid-March there, whether it's related to bonding, whether it's related to dealing with the shortfall in revenues because of the shutdown or slowdown, if you will, of our state economy over the last 3 or so months. So yeah, I definitely think we'll be going back. But the question is, what are we going to cover during that special session?
Well, that was my next question to you.
Yeah, well, that's where there's a lot of disagreement on. I think the priority and the focus, needs to be on our economy and needs to be on getting people back to work and businesses up and healthy again, so we can have people working again and earning money so they can pay for their rent, pay for their bills. Pay for their car notes, and their mortgage and, rent and all that sort of thing. But I get the feeling and the sense that, the leadership up in Hartford, and the governor's, pushing, more sort of, trying to take advantage of the situation and pushing more liberal agenda items, through.
Yeah.
And that I am adamantly opposed to, because anything that can wait until the next session where we have, the committees that are led by folks that were elected by the people of Connecticut, where we can have public hearings, where the public can comment, where we can see the details of these change in policies that are being proposed. I don't want to rush through just because we're in an emergency crisis and change policy that's going to be in effect and remain in effect for years or decades to come.
Why do you think Connecticut is so far behind to fully reopen? I mean, you heard, and you can say, well, Gary, we were in, you know, the top three as far as the you know, worst cases or most amount of cases of the coronavirus. And that's fair. But New York was the epicenter of this, really. New Jersey being second, Connecticut third. But even they're ahead of us in reopening their state. Why do you think we're last now?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a leadership issue. I mean, my push certainly, and look, I'm not trying to do Monday morning quarterbacking here. You know, this was a pandemic, it was a crisis, and certain decisions were made, but I've been quite vocal and made it quite known that the way the governor issued his executive orders without really getting input from the legislators who are representing the people of Connecticut, who are on the front lines, you know, in terms of hearing from the businesses and, you know, out there in the community, we always had to react to his executive orders, and he kept having to issue more executive orders to fix previous executive orders. Right? So that's a big issue. So I've always said that the economy is extremely important. We need to make sure that we don't destroy the economy, that we keep our eye on the ball on our economy as we're managing this health crisis. And I just think that the governor's team was just a little bit too lopsided on the health epidemic in terms of keeping their eye on the economic impact that it was having on us. Because remember, we're getting advice from medical professionals, health professionals, right? But they're not government officials, right? So they're going to give their recommendations, and it's up to the government officials, it's up to the chief elected official in Connecticut to take that information along with information you're getting from the business community, from economists, and balancing the two. And I think the governor's inexperience in government, I think he kind of dropped the ball a little bit on the economic side of this pandemic, which is extremely important. And now we're trying to get him to, you know, refocus on it appropriately, and we're trying to open up the economy. But you can see there's been fits and starts, right? Like, remember we had that May 20th date to open up some businesses, and then all of a sudden, 2 days before,
right? Yep.
He decided, he pulled the rug from under all these businesses.
The hairdressers in particular,
and spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars preparing to open on May 20th, and then he delayed it to June 1st, when he said that all of this, you know, decisions were going to be made based on science, based on data, based on metrics that he defined, right? So even as hospitalizations were going down, right, even as the number of deaths were going down and testing of people was going up, which is a good thing, he still reversed his course. So that led to a lot of folks losing confidence in anything that he says, you know, and that's, you know, part of the issue we have here.
Yeah, and you know, the legislature was locked out of the task force group. They were meeting behind closed doors. There was no media allowed, no minutes taken, and really not even FOIable. Well, now there's this Boston Consulting Group. The legislature, however, is still locked out of any of these decision making, even with this group, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
exactly.
Get me started. I can go on that for an hour. You know, you're talking about a group of folks out of Boston because what? We don't have the expertise here in Connecticut? Are you kidding me? You know, how about all these legislators that were voted into office? You know, by the people of Connecticut, they've got faith in those folks in terms of representing them. And then $2 million. Do you know how many calls I'm getting from people? Calls, texts, emails that are unemployed and are unemployment issues that they're having, and that $2 million could have gone a long way to a lot of people in my district.
Oh, yeah.
I got a lot of folks that are just really upset and offended that the governor would do that to our taxpayer dollars to get this outside group from Boston that supposedly knows more than what we.
None of them reside in Connecticut. Yeah.
We don't have any experts in Connecticut.
Well, that's just
it. Are you kidding me? In the governor's opinion? Ridiculous.
George, it's not just that they're a Boston-based consulting group, because I understand that they're one of the top five in the nation. Okay, that's fine and dandy, but none of them reside in Connecticut. So in other words, it's not just they're based out of outside of Connecticut. You can be based outside of Connecticut but live in Connecticut.
Exactly.
And then, you know, you can make an argument on both sides. It'd probably be fair where, you know, is it right, is it not right? But none of them even live here or ever have. I don't even know if they ever have. One of them I heard went to school with Lamont. I don't know how true that is. We'll have to find that out. We're talking with, say, Senator George Logan. All right, let me switch gears a little bit and talk about, you know, what happened in Minneapolis and the police, the blatant police brutality to George Floyd here. What's your assessment of that?
Oh, absolutely. So sad. You know, I've got, with my family and my son Hunter, you know, he's 20. My daughter Tracy's 18. And, you know, for them to have to, you know, they see that as well. It really affected and has affected our family tremendously to see something like that. Police officer would be so, you know, callous, and to think, even with cameras rolling, that he can get away with that. You know, they've got a major, major issue or problem there. Certainly in Minneapolis, and it's indicative of other areas of the country where we have also seen police brutality, and it just has simmered up. You know, we all must always condemn police violence, police brutality. Condemn even the rioting and looting reaction to that. You know, I commend, you know, all, you know, peaceful protests. I think that is the, you know, right way to go in terms of voicing your opinion and anger and demanding change. But my goodness gracious, I mean, that is just in 2020 to think that something like that, you know, is still happening. It's just horrible. And we need to, you know, we need to learn from this. You know, that we can't let George Floyd's life, you know, go like that in vain. There are lessons that need to be learned from this, and we need to move forward in a constructive way. And really, you know, look at this and make the appropriate changes so that everybody, whether you live in an urban area, whether you're a person of color or not, has the, you know, confidence that they should have in the police who are here to serve, you know, us, the population, to serve our community. And the vast majority of police do, you know, so we need to keep that in mind. You know, in the communities that I represent, from Ansonia to Derby and Naugatuck and Hamden, the police departments there, they're very involved in terms of their, you know, community and community service. I do everything I can to help to support our police in my the district that I serve and help them in terms of events and making that connection with the people in the community, because that is what's the most, you know, important in terms of police officers and
sure.
the community communicating with one another, understanding each other, and helping each other to keep our community safe.
But what's the connection? What's the link from protesting to evolve into rioting and looting? Where's the connection? Because while I understand the protesting, and they are certainly validated in protest, people are validated in protesting, and even police officers, even the police departments know that. But I guess I just don't see the connection to rioting and looting and burning down your own city.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm you know, focusing on Connecticut, right? Our protests have, for the most part, been very peaceful, right?
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, should continue. And local police are working with the protesters to, you know, make sure that they're able to get their voices heard. But when you go that that next wrong step towards looting your own neighborhoods and rioting, you know, what I'm seeing, at least, is that in many cases, there are people that I consider anarchists that go among the peaceful protesters and utilize the situation to do bad things. And I think that's absolutely wrong. And, you know, I don't support that at all. We should definitely condemn that type of action. Rioting and looting has no place, no rightful place when it comes to protesting and really utilizing your First Amendment to get what you want out there in the public.
And it's good to hear you say that. I mean, you're an African-American leader. You know, you really are here in the state of Connecticut. You're well-regarded. You are extremely respected now and even when I served with you in the legislature. And you're also very likable, which helps for radio, by the way.
Oh, I appreciate it.
No, that's why we love having you on, actually. And extremely articulate, and that helps in radio as well. And do people, I mean, I would imagine in the district that you serve, that people must come to you as a leader asking for guidance, you know, and what should occur, what's your stance on things. People are I'm sure they're looking for your opinion on all of this. And, you know, what do you tell them? What do you tell them? Because you know, demonstrating is one thing. You know, protesting is one thing. And in fact, it's our nation was built. We're allowed to do that. We have the our Constitution allows that. That's what makes our country so unique and so wonderful. But rioting and looting is not acceptable in any way, shape, or form.
No, absolutely not. And you have to look at your leaders, right? Your legislative leaders. You got to look at the governor's team, you know, and what are they, you know, doing in terms of addressing those issues of concern for you, you know? When I, you know, take a look, I'm telling folks, I say, look, last year there was a Senate bill that actually turned in, became law, and it added, you know, these very chokeholds to the list of incidents that police departments must report. Because again, this has simmered and exploded all over the nation in terms of protests and some of them going violent because this is not, you know, a new issue. But here in Connecticut, we have been attempting and trying to address this. Now, we're not totally there yet,